This episode brought to you by Own the Gray podcast. Discover how others age with attitude at ownthegray.ca.
Welcome to another episode of Lunch with a Healer. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Hoff. My guest today, Kathleen Donnelly Israel, was born in 1949 in San Diego, California, where she's lived her whole life. She has a bachelor's degree in art from San Diego State University. She studied expressive arts therapy at the European Graduate School in Switzerland. She's a certified transformational breathing facilitator, theta healer, and has enjoyed a lifetime of walking, hiking, and running. Kathleen cared for her husband, Ron, for the 17 years that he had Parkinson's disease until he died in 2018. During this time, she studied spiritual healing from many enlightened thought leaders and teachers. At the age of 70, Kathleen decided to walk the Camino Santiago de Compostela, which is 500 miles across northern Spain, solo. She's written a book entitled Wisdom on the Camino about her journey, and today I'm speaking with Kathleen about her life and her book. And now, let's meet inspirational and unstoppable Kathleen.
The best conversations happen when we're having lunch with our friends, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair and join us to expand your knowledge and open your mind.
Welcome, Kathleen, to the show.
I'm so happy to be here.
I'm very excited to have this discussion because we're going to talk about your book, Wisdom on the Camino, which is about your decision at 70 years young to walk the Camino Santiago de Compostela. I hope I pronounced that okay, which is 500 miles. You walked it alone, solo, after your husband passed away. So first, congratulations on accomplishing this, not once, but twice, as you're going to tell us a little bit later in our discussion. Quite a feat. But first, I'd like some background info before we get into the actual walk. So you took care of your husband, Ron, for 17 years. He had Parkinson's disease. What did that entail?
Well, when he first was diagnosed with Parkinson's, he wasn't really very bad. And so, you know, for several years, he had to retire because he couldn't write anymore, and he had to document what he did at work. So he couldn't do his job anymore. He thought he would get another job, but the medicine they gave him made him tired, and he kept falling asleep, so he couldn't get another job. So there we were, you know, with his little tiny pension from, you know, retiring so early. That was pretty scary. And he didn't want to be on the dole, he said, so he didn't want to get Social Security. It was a crazy time. But anyway, we made it through. I finally talked him into getting Social Security so we could actually live our life. He could drive. He could do all kinds of stuff. And it was so amazing. Our son, he was a Cutco rep. So he had to sell a lot of Cutco because he had to take care of himself in college. He was in college at the time. He actually donated $1,000 to the Parkinson's Disease Foundation in Ron's name, and they sent Ron a thank you. And so Ron was like, well, I got to do something for John. So he decided he was going to ride his bicycle to Spokane, Washington from San Diego, which is a crazy thing to do because people drive south, not north, because of the wind, you know? Yeah. Anyway, so even though he had Parkinson's, I said, okay, well, go out and ride your bike. Let's see how far you can go in a day. And he came back and he said 36 miles. And so I did the math and I said, well, we have to leave March 1st. So we left March 1st and he rode his bicycle to Spokane, Washington. And the neighbor across the street provided a motorhome and we followed him up there.
That's incredible. So you didn't ride as well. You rode the motorhome, followed him.
And a car. So we would take the motorhome and park it. And then Doug had a car that he had on a blue ox behind the motorhome. And we would follow him the next day. Either Doug or I would follow him. And we had a flashers on, and we had this sign, "One Man's Ride for Parkinson's Disease." And yeah, we just made sure nobody ran him off the road or something, you know.
That's amazing. Did you raise a fair bit from that?
Yeah, probably not even enough to finance our trip. I told Ron, you're going to have to get $6,000. We have to stay somewhere. He didn't. And I thought, oh, good, we can't go, you know. And then the right. neighbor across the street was like, oh, can I come? I've got, you could have a place to stay. So then I was like, ah. And the guy across the street is a paraplegic. So there I was taking care of a paraplegic and a Parkinsonian.
Wow.
And, but anyway, Doug's he was pretty good. All I had to do was cook and clean.
So that was when he was still a functional Parkinson's patient.
Yeah. Yeah. He still could, he was still functional. I set it up that he could ride his bicycle 4 days a week and rest for 3 days. Cause I mean, he was ill. He had
right.
to rest. We made it.
During the 17 years, when did it get really rough?
In 2010, he had so much pain. You could look at him and say, this man is in pain, even though he didn't complain. And so we went in, we took him in, and he had a stenosis of the spine. Right around then, this doctor, this retired doctor, came to our house, and he wanted to look. I sell negative ion clothes. And they wanted, you know, he wanted to see the negative ion clothes. And when he saw Ron, he said, okay, well, now I know why I came. And he thought he was going to cure Ron. So he wanted to take Ron off of all of his meds. And I said, okay, well, Ron doesn't do anything I tell him to do. So you go talk to Ron if you want to do that. So he did. And Ron said, sure. And so he took him off all his meds. He came every day to give Ron a vitamin B shot and do one of the coffee enemas. He had me doing 3 coffee enemas a day and juicing green apples and celery and carrots and feeding them to him. And he thought he was going to cure Ron. Since Ron wasn't taking his meds, he was paralyzed. He couldn't move. Anyway, after 6 months, the doctor gave up. He's like, yeah, I guess that didn't work. So Ron was really happy to not be in pain. He was like, wow, this is great. He didn't want to take the meds again so he could move. He wanted to be without pain.
Oh, so you mean when this doctor took him off meds and got him on a raw juicing diet, that which is what I assume it sounds like he did, his pain actually went away?
Yeah, after the first coffee enema, no more pain. Our children were like, okay, Mom, well, you can't leave him paralyzed. That's not going to be okay. So they heard about some deep brain stimulators. He got a deep brain stimulator. The first one worked, but when they did the second side, he was paralyzed after that. He couldn't move. He couldn't talk, couldn't walk. So that was 2011. So, and he died in 2018. So he was basically paralyzed from 2010 to 2018.
What about you? So
right.
It's the support person often that is extremely difficult for. So you've written that you are a strong Catholic, you had strong faith, but during this time you developed some spiritual philosophies. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Well, you know, when I grew up, I had kind of a rough childhood. And so I had a lot, I mean, I had post-traumatic stress disorder, for gosh sakes. And then I thought, well, I have to be here with Ron. So I had plenty of time to go online and study with enlightened thought leaders and heal myself. And it was like God sent me a healer, and I would buy their program and I would do their stuff. And then after a while, it wasn't so interesting anymore. And God would send me another one. And another one and another one. And so what I think happened is each healer raised my vibration a certain amount and then more and more and more. So I was not in such emotional pain anymore, which was wonderful. After studying for so long with all those enlightened thought leaders, I felt like I had some philosophies of my own of what worked for me, what was just so serendipitous in my life. And so I wanted to write a book about those things. I didn't want to keep them to myself. And when I went to write the book, I was just like reluctant to be teachy. And I remembered I had told all those things to people on the Camino. So I wrote my book about walking the Camino and telling people those things. One of them is the Ho'oponopono. Have you heard of that?
I have, but I'm sure a lot of my listeners have not. So please explain that.
Ho'oponopono is a Hawaiian healing technique for the family. And it's like a prayer or an incantation, whatever you want to call it. But it's magical. And the reason why is because it looses our binds to people that are trouble in our life. So we are kind of bound to these people and they signed up to ruin our life, right? And so we can loose our binds to those people. So the prayer is, you say, I love you. And it's, I love God. God loves me. God loves the other person. The other person loves God. And if you can say it, you say, I love them, they love me. And then, I love you, I'm sorry. And it's not, I'm sorry I did anything, but it's, I'm sorry this situation exists between us. And then it's, please forgive me. And it's not, forgive me for doing something, but forgive me for what's going on in me that caused me to attract this. I have this low vibration here that's attracting some adversity into me. And I want to own that. Please forgive me for what's going on in me that caused me to attract this. And then you say, thank you for showing me this so I could heal. So if I didn't know about this sadness inside of me, I couldn't heal it. So thank you for showing me this so I could heal. And then I love you. I love God. God loves me. God loves them. They love me.
That's wonderful. Did you feel lighter after you did that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, one evening I was doing it. And I was feeling shame. And I thought, well, this prayer is not about shame. I'm doing it wrong. And so I was kind of analyzing it. And so the next time I said it, I said, when I said, please forgive me, I said, I forgive me.
Right.
And I forgive it up. And when I said, I forgive it up, I felt this refrigerator sized prayer pain come out of me and go up to God. And I just thought, oh my gosh. And so like that night, I mean, you know, my monkey mind would just present to me all kinds of things that went wrong in my life while I'm trying to sleep, right? Everybody does that. And so each time one would come up, I would do the Ho'oponopono. I call it my extended Ho'oponopono. And then I got rid of so much, and actually I had to do it for years because I've been attracting all kinds of sadness in my life for what, 50, 60 years, you know? And so it wasn't a one-off.
Right.
I think it's really good for a soaking prayer. And as a matter of fact, when I water my yard, I go from plant to plant. Each plant gets a Ho'oponopono.
Still.
To the next plant.
You're still doing that.
Yeah, because you know what? It's a soaking prayer, and you can soak yourself in it, soak your spirit in it.
So was that the most important spiritual philosophy that you embraced?
It changed my life. There's another one about worrying. If you worry, what you're actually doing is making up a bad story and then having faith in it. So it's important to think up good stories and also realize there are endless possibilities. When we've had trauma, we think that, you know, we get kind of narrow-minded and we just see what we need to watch out for. And so we can be narrow-minded about what our possibilities are. Actually, there's endless possibilities. So worrying is really not necessary. It's not helpful. It's actually cursing the other person if you worry about them, because you're sending them bad vibrations where they need some good vibrations if they're, you know, kind of,
I know,
trying to get through.
I know. And so many of us are just natural worriers. So this all helped you deal with Ron and his subsequent passing.
Yes. Ron's illness helped me let go of him. Actually, in the end, I was very proud of him that he found a way out of his body. It's really hard to die.
Oh, okay. So he passed, and you decide, I don't know what the timing is here, you decide that you're going to walk the Camino Santiago Trail. I mean, I really would love to hear this story and why the Camino?
When Ron got sick, I had to realize that we weren't going to be doing what we thought we'd do in our old age. I thought we would be riding our bicycles across France or something. He was an athlete, and I was a wannabe athlete. We actually ran a marathon together. He ran it in 3 hours, and I was 5.5 hours.
Doesn't matter, you did it.
I did.
Yeah.
While I was taking care of him, it was about 2013. I called my friend and asked her when she went on the Camino, and she said 2013. So in 2013, she's my friend on Facebook. We grew up together. We used to walk to school together. And my friend Judy, and she walked the Camino and put it on Facebook. And so I was just like, wow, that is amazing. And I realized, even though she got blisters and was walking with bloody feet, I recognized she was doing something very special for herself.
Yeah.
And I decided this is what I'm going to do when Ron's done with his disease. I'm going to walk the Camino. So he died in August. And, I was busy with the insurance and the funeral, all the stuff I had to do, the bank and the trust. And
Yeah.
so by January, I was pretty much done with all that stuff. And I thought, well, if I'm going to walk the Camino, I need to get ready. So I started reading books and watching YouTubes. And I went to a lecture at the library about how to pack light for the Camino. And got a lot of good pointers from that person, in person, which was really great. And I started accumulating the things I needed. And I ordered like very light clothing. It was like a science. I was like,
Yeah.
looking at the ounces of everything. If they didn't have ounces, I was like, ah, I'm not buying that, And I got my clothes together. I got everything I needed, and I was ready to go. The end of March.
Okay, did you want to do this alone? Did you have anyone that would have done this with you, or did you specifically want to accomplish this by yourself?
I asked people to go with me.
Okay.
I had no idea what it would be like. I was not afraid to go alone. I've traveled alone quite a bit, actually, in my life. Yeah, I wasn't afraid because I read the books and everybody said it was safe and I believed them. But the thing about going on the Camino that I didn't even know at that time is everybody walks a different speed. So if I took somebody with me, they probably wouldn't be walking with me anyway, unless, somebody walks slow for another person, or,
Right.
maybe God forbid you walk fast so you can be with somebody else. I did that when I went to Portugal. I was walking fast. Oh my gosh. I can't do that
That's
very
the
long.
that was the second one. Okay, we'll get to that. Okay, so just briefly, what is the Camino Santiago Trail?
The French way is the traditional way. You go from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port over the Pyrenees through the Meseta and to Santiago. It's like 489 miles. It's basically 500 miles. The Portuguese way, and I started in Lisbon. A lot of people start in Porto. It's not as far. Then there's the Camino del Norte, which is what I'm going to do next year. I'm going to walk along the northern coast of Spain. There's one from Madrid, and really anywhere in Europe, you can walk out your front door and start your Camino. Walk out the front door, and that's how they do it. So,
That is incredible. Okay, so you decide to do the Camino. You said that you're a wannabe athlete, but even if you like to walk recreationally, walking the Camino is a different animal. How do you train to walk 500 miles?
well, you know what? I used to walk 3 days a week with my friend down at the bay here on San Diego Bay on Mission Bay. And I used to walk 3 days a week, and we'd walk 5 miles, and I didn't even break a sweat. It was just fine. And so I thought, well, I could walk 5 miles before lunch and 5 miles after lunch, and I can do this. So, and also, I used to volunteer at a horse ranch. So I would go around and pick up the horse Pucky in a wheelbarrow, you know, and so I had a pretty strong core, actually. Okay. And right before I left, my sister-in-law, God bless her, she said, Kathleen, you're going to have to walk up mountains. So we're going to go walk up mountains. And she just took me on all the mountains in San Diego, and we walked up them. So that was that was good. You know, I didn't even think of that. So now what I do is I walk to church in the morning, and there's a hill between me and the church. So now I'm keeping myself able to walk up hills.
Was it hilly? Was it difficult? Was it treacherous?
I was very careful not to fall. After my husband died, my son is a paramedic, and he said, okay, Mom, you're going to have a good life. Don't fall. Yeah. And I was just like, okay. I decided I wasn't going to fall on the Camino. And one time, I mean, I actually gracefully fell to my butt. One of my friends wanted to help me up, and I'm like, nope, I'm just going to scooch down. So I went down that mountain on my butt.
That was clever.
And I was so glad when I got to the bottom that I didn't have any holes in my pants.
Is this trail well marked? How do you know where you're going?
Yeah, so there's yellow arrows all the way along. And you see a yellow arrow and you go the way it says. And you keep going that way until you see another yellow arrow telling you to go a different way. And sometimes you can miss an arrow. So you can be walking in the wrong direction. And usually people will see you on the street and go, oh, you missed an arrow, go back, you know. Okay. So the people on the Camino are aware, who live there, are aware of the pilgrims and trying to keep them, you know, where they need to be. So okay. it's really great. And one time I could see ahead on my little map that it wasn't supposed to be a hilly day. I thought, oh, great, it's just going to be a regular, you know, no hills today. And when I was walking, I went down this hill, and I'm like, if you go down, you got to go up, you know? And so I thought something was wrong. And then pretty soon a couple was walking up the hill, and they said, we went the wrong way, turn around. And so I didn't have to go all the way down where they went. And so we came to the top, and we saw the arrow we missed.
Right.
Everybody missed it, I guess.
How busy was it on this trail?
It was not busy in April. It got busy. I didn't finish till June, okay. Actually. So it got busy in June. It's more busy from Sarria on. Sarria is 100K from Santiago, actually 111K. And so if you start in Sarria, you can still get your Compostela certificate. Because you only have to go 1,000 K.
Okay.
And so 100K.
Right.
Sorry, 100K. So a lot of people start there. And so when you get there, it's busy.
Yes, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that. Did you get any blisters?
Nope.
None. That's amazing.
I wear negative ion socks. They put negative ions into your foot while you're walking. I was glad I didn't get blisters, but it wasn't surprising to me. Somebody told me every time you stop, you take your shoes off and massage your feet. And I think that's very helpful also.
Did you stop in towns for a couple of days when you wanted to, like have a date that you wanted to finish by?
At the end, I kind of did because I set up some art classes in Scotland and I needed to get out of there. I had some difficulty. I got ill a couple of times. I got a urinary tract infection. I got an upper respiratory problem. Everybody on the Camino got the flu at one time. I won't say everybody, but a lot of people did. So there were some things like that that made me stop. And in the end, I had a UTI at the end, and they wanted me to stay an extra 3 days, but I had already stayed in the town. By the time I went to the doctor, I had already stayed 4 days in the town before that. And I really needed to get to Scotland because I had paid for those art classes. So I was like, no, I'm going to walk.
Do you speak Spanish?
A little bit. I mean, I can put some sentences together and have the translate, Google Translate,
yes,
also on your phone. So it's like a no-brainer. I mean, when I was in France, I had to use that. I certainly don't speak French.
Yeah. Okay. So you're walking with a backpack. I mean, you need water.
Yeah. So I knew that I needed to drink 2 agua grandes a day. And an agua grande is 1.5 liters.
Right.
And that's when I got the UTI. It was because I was walking up a hill and I was sweating more than I was drinking.
Okay.
And that's why that happened. I probably should have drunk more. I was talking to my niece who backpacks, and she said you need 3-4 liters a day. And so I'm like, oh well, I guess next time I'll try and do 4 liters a day. But so I would, you know, what I would do is I would, in the morning when I started out, I would go to the first bar and I would buy a cafe con leche and go use the bathroom.
Right.
And I would go to the next place and I would get myself some tortilla, which is the Spanish tortilla with eggs and potatoes.
Right.
And then I would use the bathroom. Then I'd go to the next place and buy an agua grande and I'd use the bathroom. So, I mean,
right,
a lot of times you could use the bars to get something and go to the bathroom. Sometimes you couldn't. And so you had to find some bushes.
Right.
Anyway.
You do what you have to do. So this is not a recreational walk. This is a tough walk. The Camino.
It is, but it's beautiful. They're winding roads and you're walking and you look up and you see, oh, good, there's the top of the mountain. And you get there and there it winds more. And you're like, okay, so that wasn't the top, you know, and you just keep going and going and going. And after a while, I was just like, well, it can't last forever. I just need to keep walking.
So what were the age group of the people that you saw on the trail?
Yeah, there were some old people, not very many. There were mostly younger people. I met a guy, he must have been in his early 50s, and he was very surprised I was there, and he was very glad I was there because he said he never thought that he would be doing a thing like that in his 70s. And so I gave him hope. But it was mostly young people. I saw, I mean, somebody dropped their teenagers off and picked them up in Santiago and told them to walk, you know, brother and sister.
Can you tell me about some of the adventures that you had? A couple of them, maybe?
I went into this town. It was a monastery. And so, you know, you kind of walk down this hill into this monastery. And I decided to stay there that night. You get in line and you check in and they take your passport, American passport, you know, wherever you're from. And then there's a Camino passport and they have to stamp it every night. You get a stamp at the place where you're at. So they'll know they're letting a pilgrim stay there. It's for pilgrims. It's very cheap, 5 to 12 euros a night for these places. So I went in there and there was one of the guys from the second night that I was there. He was there. There was a couple from Hungary there. And my grandmother came from Hungary on the boat. Anyway, it was lovely. And I met a lady from Amsterdam and had a great talk with her. I told her about the Ho'oponopono. I had been having difficulty sleeping at night because of the snoring in the albergues. And so the lady from Amsterdam said, well, he didn't tell us when we had to leave. So why don't you just sleep in the morning and have a leisurely breakfast and then leave, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay. And so I had gone to the store and bought me some eggs and peppers and, you know, stuff to make a breakfast and lunch. And I was making my breakfast and lunch and this guy came in who had checked us in and he got really angry, but he was speaking Spanish and I didn't know what he was talking about. And I just smiled at him and kept making my breakfast. And then I ate my breakfast and started making my lunch. And he came in again and he was like really mad. Then he came back again and he found his English words and he was like, you're ruining my life. you know, you're supposed to be out of here by 8 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, well, gee, you didn't tell us, you know, and he was so angry with me. And I said, well, I'll just give you some more money. And he can, you can't pay me for my day. I could be with my family right now, but I have to be here because you're here, you know? And, and so I'm like, okay, well, I got everything together. I got my stuff and packed my pack. And then I was leaving and I was going to go to the bathroom, and he had his broom going this way and his mop going this way as an X across the ladies' room door. And he looked at me and he pointed to the door and he said, no, out, like that. And I was like, oh, I'm going to leave without going to the bathroom. So I grabbed my pack very quickly and very carefully walked down the stairs so I wouldn't fall. And I got to the bottom and I met this lady and she said, just leave. And I said, well, I don't even know where the door is. How do you get out of here? And so she took me to the entrance room, and it had a bathroom. So I went into the bathroom, and then I was going to leave. And when I opened the bathroom door, there he was standing and looking at me sheepishly. And he handed me my medals. And I had my medals. I had a couple of medals from my grandmother pinned onto my collar of my shirt. And I guess when I threw on my backpack, they flew off. And he grabbed them, he was giving them to me, and he looked very sad. So I took them and I noticed one of my medals was missing. So I said, well, where's St. Jerome? And he goes, Jerome. And so he went out in the garden and was looking and he didn't find it and I didn't find it either. So I'm like, okay, well, I guess St. Jerome is for somebody else. And so I just left. But it was like such an amazing thing that he got angry, but then he realized, you know, this is a holy woman that you're treating like this. So he felt bad. But the thing about it is, they warn you that you're going to meet crabby people on the Camino, and that's just to help you get over some stuff in your life. So I wasn't surprised that happened.
Yeah, that is interesting. And actually leads into my next question. What did you think about hour after hour when you were walking, or did you in fact not want to think, just clear the mind chatter? Was it basically a time to clear inner issues?
Pretty sure it was, but I wasn't thinking about that. When I was there, I was just noticing what was around me and just really appreciating everything that was around me. I mean, the sounds, you'd be walking up a mountain and it had been raining. So you hear the water going down all the gullies and going under the street. And it was just a beautiful prattle of sound. Like, I remember walking through this area that the hills were so close to each other. I felt like I was in a room and the trees above. And it was almost like the air was even green because everything was green around me, up and down and sideways, you know, walking through towns. And they have art on their buildings over there, really amazing art. Sometimes it's just so delightful to see playgrounds where the equipment is like purple and blue and red, you know, and it's just like, and they have a playground for adults and children. So you have the exercise equipment and the children's play stuff in the same area. And the people that I met, everybody passed me up. I was an old lady and I have a bum foot too. And so I was walking slow.
The people that you did meet, did everyone seem to have a story why they were doing it?
Yes, everyone had a story. Somebody had lost their wife. One guy got divorced and he was there to make some decisions. There was somebody who was taking care of his brother, and there were three boys, and his older brother had gone away already. And now it was his turn to go away. And his younger brother was angry with him for leaving. You know, he had to live his life. And so he was there to figure that one out. There was a guy who three of his friends had died in rapid succession and he couldn't do his life anymore. And somebody told him, you should go walk the Camino. So he was there doing that. Somebody, one job ended, and in a month he would start the next job. So he had a month. So he thought he'd walk the Camino. Younger people can do it in 35 days. I was there for 66 days.
But you did it. That's the thing. It doesn't matter how long it takes.
Yeah, it was better.
my attitude about it anyway. Were you isolated a lot of the time? Did it bother you to be alone?
You know, in the beginning, it bothered me to be alone and also having everybody pass me up. It gave me kind of a little bit of a depression. In the beginning, you're in the mountains and you're walking on windy roads and you can't see way ahead and you can't see behind you. But after I got on the Mesita, I could see way ahead of me and way behind me. And there were people on the road that I didn't know were there because it was a windy road.
Right.
So after I got, you know, to the straight road and I could see people behind me or in front of me, then I felt much better, like I wasn't alone. And it felt good that those people behind me stayed behind me too. Not everybody was passing me up.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like I was the slowest person there. There were other slow people. They just didn't pass me up. That's all.
What did you ultimately learn after you've accomplished this?
I learned that I could take care of myself. I found ways to take care of myself. I found my way around, you know, all by myself. And I had to ask questions. I can take care of myself. When I got married, I went from my mother's house to my husband's house. And even though he was young too, and we did our life together, I wasn't alone. We relied on each other. Now I am, you know, I'm sort of on my own. I rent my rooms to students. I live right by the university. So I'm not really alone. Yeah, on the Camino, I was in charge of me and I was in charge of getting everything I needed, finding food and being smart about stuff. And it made me feel good to share with people, like they would have a problem and I would share Ho'oponopono with them or possibility thinking with them, you know.
So are you're a stronger person physically and emotionally? After doing
this? You know, it really took my health down, taking care of Ron. It was, and my health was pretty down too when I started the Camino. And even when I was done with the Camino, I wasn't all there. I was still grieving. I didn't know it was grieving at the time. I was just kind of out of it. Now I feel like I'm more there. It's been 4 years since he died. And so I think I've got my brains about me a lot more now. Than
okay. And why did you decide to walk the second one?
I like a pilgrimage. It intrigued me. Maybe I like to do long distance things. I love to walk.
Yeah. And there's going to be a third?
Yeah.
And you're doing all this alone. You did the second one alone as well.
I did this, you know, somebody told me they were going to go with me, but they backed out. And somebody is telling me they're going to go with me to El Norte. And I actually think she might, you know.
Oh, boy, you might regret that.
I know, because the reason why I liked being alone is because when you're alone, there's no drama.
Exactly.
You just have to meet everything as it comes and deal with it.
Yeah.
When I was there, I could see couples and the drama of a couple, you know, and how they kind of use each other to complain to. I just felt really blessed that I didn't have anybody to complain to.
Yeah.
I think I would have complained, you know, and I was free of that because I didn't have anybody to complain to.
Right. I understand that totally. So after this, would you have a message to my listeners, a valuable piece of advice?
Yeah, don't fall.
Don't fall. That's a good one.
I have a prayer that I want to share. It's a very powerful prayer. When I say this prayer, miracles happen. And the prayer is, dear God, please make everything turn out okay. And then you let God make everything turn out okay. And God really likes it when we acknowledge that God can do these things that we can't do. So that's my advice.
It's allowing life to unfold. Whatever higher source, God, whatever you want to call it, is much smarter than we are. So is there going to be another book?
Yeah, I'm writing the book about Portugal right now. you know, I gave a bunch of money to the self-publishing school and they helped me write my book. And when you're done with the first book, they say, okay, well, what's your next book? And then they say, okay, are you going to make a box set? And
really,
so my, you know, the Camino del Norte is going to be my box set.
Okay.
The three books, I think.
I think that what you're doing, what you've done is amazing. I think that everyone should read your book because it's inspiring. Where can my listeners find you?
The book is on Amazon and it's Wisdom on the Camino. Actually, I have a subtitle. It's a spiritual journey, sharing forgiveness and possibilities to inspire the rest of your life. So you can get it on Amazon. I have a website, wisdomonthecamino.com. One thing I want to tell everybody is I have a free gift. It's in the book, right across from the table of contents is my free gift to you. And I'm sorry you have to double opt in. That's just the way they have to do things now. But you go in and you double opt in and you can see my pictures. Is I made a website with a gallery. Each chapter has a chapter of pictures that goes with the chapter. So you can look at the pictures while you're reading the book.
Fabulous. How long did it take you to write the book?
Actually, it took me 3 months. And it took me 9 months to set up my website. I just didn't know what I was doing.
That I get. So in other words, the book poured out of you. You wanted to be written.
Yes.
Well, this has been really interesting. And again, congratulations on everything that you've done. Thank you very, very much for your time. This was fascinating. And I encourage everyone to read Wisdom on the Camino, which you can get at Amazon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share it with your friends. And join us next time for Lunch with a Healer. Now you can share your thoughts with us. Your comments, questions, and suggestions are all welcome. Go to speakpipe.com/lunchwithahealer and record your message. Try it out today.